coming to you from deep inside the bowels of a great big empty. Get ready for another episode of The Home Defense Show with Skip Coriel.
Hello, American families. Welcome to this week's episode of The Home Defense Show. I'm your host, Skip Coriel. And if you love your family, care about them deeply, and want to learn how to protect them in every facet of your life, then you've come to the right place. Oh, folks, we have got such a great show for you today. I know I say that every single week, but this week we have got none other than the dynamic duo of self-protection. We have John Correa from Active Self Protection, and then we have Terry Johnson, legal attorney from Firearms Legal Protection. So I don't know which one of them is Batman and which one is Robin. I'll let them fight that out. But hey, they're both fantastic. And what we're going to be doing today on the show in segments two and three is in segments two, John Correa from Active Self Protection, he is going to be doing a tactical analysis of that Tallahassee, Florida, quote-unquote, stand your ground case from Michael Draca and Michael McLaughlin. And then in segment three, Terry Johnson from Firearms Legal Protection, he will be doing the legal analysis. So you're going to hear the tactical and the legal analysis of that alleged stand your ground case. And of course, then in segment four, the host will tell you what he really thinks about it. And we are loaded for bear today, folks. But first, what have I been doing? Oh, man, I am just busier than a one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest. The summer is officially over, but my kids and I, we are still going swimming. We were swimming at the local swimming hole, Lake 16. The kids always ask me, Dad, where's Lake 15? I've never seen that. I don't think there is one. Lake 16 in Martin, Michigan, that's where we go swimming. They have a you know, a public access site there, and we go swimming there. And boy, the water is really not bad for you know, the end of the first week in September. So when we're done recording today, I'll probably take them out swimming again. I think we'll probably be swimming all the way into mid-September. Why? Because we're tough here on the Coriel Ranch. That's the way we are. I raise them like Marines. We are just about done canning, I think. Right now, even as I'm recording, I've got cans of tomato sauce in there just processing away. After that, all I've got to do is finish out the woodshed. Almost got that finished up. And then pear juice. Probably in about a month, maybe 3 weeks, we will be canning pear juice to go with our grape juice. And oh man, we're going to be drinking it all winter long while we're sitting with our feet up next to the fireplace as we burn away all of that wood that I had to cut and split and haul and stack. But you know what? It's going to be worth it. I love an 85 degree living room in the deep, dead dark of winter. Oh, what did I do? Oh, just last night. I had a wonderful time on the gun range. Just last night, it was with one of my churches. I only go to one church, but, you know, I teach several churches tactics and shooting proficiency, things like that, qualification for their church security teams. And I was working with a church security team last night, and for 2 hours, we worked on unorthodox shooting positions. And to start out, you know, I gave them a demonstration, and just seeing the looks on their faces, it was golden. It was platinum to watch them watch me shoot, because I'm shooting away, and I think I had like three, four magazines, and I shot, you know, like 50 rounds or so, 60 rounds, and I'm on my back shooting, you know, over my head while on my back, on my right side, on my left side while facing the target, then turned around, shoot from the sitting, from the kneeling, and then laying down, shooting between my legs. And boy, I had a nice tight little group there too, you know, everything in about a 4-inch circle there. And I got done and I looked over and everybody was just, you know, looking at me like I'm like Daniel Boone or something. And I said, what's wrong? What are you guys looking at? And they said, will you come to our church? And I said, why? Well, we want you on our security team. So apparently they were impressed by the unorthodox shooting positions. But you know what? What I told them, I said, you know, most of your shooting is going to be done in the isosceles stance. You're going to get up there. You're going to have a perfect stance, feet shoulder width apart, legs slightly bent at the knees, and you're going to thrust out, you know, from the high ready position. You're going to lock your elbows. You're going to lock your wrists. And you're going to put your head down inside that V, and you're going to shoot from a really good, solid, stable platform. But every once in a while, somebody knocks you on your butt, and you have to fight your way back up. Sometimes that means shooting from the ground, shooting on your back, on your stomach, on your knee, on your butt. You know, just all of those different things. Before you do it that first time, it seems very, very difficult. It's like, how could I do that? Well, you've never done it before. Just go ahead and do it. Learn the proper way to do it. And once you start doing it, it is easy peasy lemon squeezy. So, you know, and I got all of them down there on the ground and one at a time, and I took them through the paces. And boy, they all did fantastic. So I can't tell you the name of the church. It's confidential. But, you know, they did a great time. And, you know, God pity the active shooter that goes into their church, because they will put that man down, whether they're on their back or on their knees or on their butt. The bad guy's going down. So I'm proud of that church. And I'm sure some of them are listening even now. All right, let's get into the news now. We've got some good stuff here. Every once in a while, I just like to do some kind of bizarre news stories about personal defense. And this one is from, I'm not sure what it's from. Oh, this was from Fox News. The title is, "I hit your father with a baseball bat and he's dead," woman told son. Okay. There's a picture of her here, a mugshot. She's not happy. But then I guess her husband's not happy either. A Pennsylvania man, concerned when his mother didn't show up for work Thursday, received some bad news when he arrived at his parents' home, according to reports. His 63-year-old mother wouldn't let him inside, and then she told him what happened. Quote, "I hit your father with a baseball bat, and he's dead," unquote, she said, according to the report. The son immediately called the police. I think that was a good move. And then get the heck away from mom. When officers arrived, Deborah Ann Stevens of York Springs, I believe this is in Pennsylvania, told them she killed her husband the night before. The night before. What? And then she went to bed and slept? That is cold. That is cold. Now she's facing a homicide charge, the station reported. According to the report, investigators confirmed that state police had been called to the home twice last month on August 21 and August 28 on reports of domestic violence. The first incident involved a woman hitting her husband with a TV remote, the report said. Details of the second incident were not available. On Thursday, the body of James Stevens, 65, showed bruises consistent with being struck with a bat, the report said. You know, you can call this woman, you know, a murderer, but she's certainly not a liar. The woman was later examined at a hospital where she was found to have self-inflicted wounds to both wrists. So it sounds like she wanted a murder-suicide. She was later taken to Adams County Prison in Gettysburg. I think that's a good place for her. She'll probably fit in really well there at Gettysburg Prison. You know, this is unusual to some of you, because when you think of domestic violence, you're thinking a man beat the crap out of a woman, you know, a husband beat up a wife. And folks, I can tell you, you know, it more and more women are beating up men. You know, hey, we wanted equality. We got it. Okay. I can tell you in my previous marriage, my then wife, you know, she got drunk and started beating on me. And, you know, I was bigger and stronger than her. And about the only thing I could do was take it. Because I had my 7 and 5-year-old children right there hovered underneath me clinging to my legs, crying while she beat on me. I don't tell you that to elicit sympathy, because I don't need sympathy. I'm not in that marriage anymore. I'm very happy, and you know, I got a great wife now. But, you know, it's not always a man beating up a woman. You just have to be careful. Long story short, I called the police, and she was arrested. It was incredibly sad, because my daughter was questioned by police and had to tell them what happened. She was right there. She saw it. And I'm sure she carries the emotional scars to this day. But hey, again, when you let crazy people into your life gets crazy. And we were talking about this just last night. The person who is most likely to hurt you or kill you, you probably already know them. It's not usually a stranger who attacks you and hurts you or murders you. It's usually someone that you know. So be careful who you let into your life, because they could be your undoing. And God forbid if it's a relative, because you know what? You can pick your friends, but you're stuck with your relatives. What do you do when the person most likely to hurt you is a relative that you love? And that is very, very sad. And of course, this story here, that's sad as well. You know, every small town in America has stories like this. We've had a rash of them in our little neighborhood here, in our little community. In the county right next to me, we had, two more people being murdered by a family member just last week. And the week before, they had two more murdered. And the week before that, they had two more murdered. What is going on with the world? It's like the... You know, the world is crazy as a shithouse bat sometimes, and that's the way that it is. Be careful who you let in your life, okay? Just be careful, folks. Well, hey, you know, that's the only news story we have time for in this segment. But the next segment, we are going to be speaking with John Correa from Act of Self-Protection, and I'm going to read a news story to John. And it was the Michael Draca, Michael McLaughlin, quote unquote, stand your ground case in Tallahassee, Florida. And John is going to do what he does best, which is give us the tactical analysis. And I tell you, nobody does this better than John Correa of Active Self Protection. We are going to have a really, really good time with that, and you are going to learn a lot. We got a 2-minute break coming up here. Go ahead and check out our sponsors. Go to firearmslegal.com/Midwest Tactical and see what they can do for you. And then go to elitefirearms.us. And, of course, check out Civilian Combat by Skip Coriel and amazon.com. All right. This is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
My name is Siege Coriel. Welcome to the Home Defense Show with my dad, Skip Coriel. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. Boy, today we are speaking with John Correa from Active Self-Protection. John, welcome to the Home Defense Show.
Skip, thanks so much for having me on. Always a pleasure.
Well, John, you know, today we've got you and we've got Terry Johnson from Firearms Legal Protection. I take you two as my dynamic duo, the crime fighters of, Firearms Legal Protection and Active Self-Protection. So it's good to have you on. Now, I want to be doing this about once a month, and boy, I tell you, the case that we're looking at right now, you're going to give us a tactical analysis of this latest shooting in Florida. Well, it may not be the latest by now, but it happened, about a month ago. Florida stand-your-ground shooter Michael Draca charged with manslaughter. And what I want to do, John, is just read you the bare facts of the case as outlined in this article. And then I want to get your tactical analysis of, you know, is this good? Is this bad? What should he have done different? Was he spot on? Who knows? But before we get into that, tell us about Active Self-Protection. You know, who are you and what's up in your world?
Well, Active Self-Protection at its core is a self-defense and firearms training company based out of Phoenix. We travel the country teaching mostly handgun skills, but some empty-handed skills as well. What I'm known for, though, is people send me real-life surveillance videos of armed robberies, carjackings, muggings, stabbings, home invasions, attacks of all kind, and I do after-acts on them on our YouTube channel. And it's the most viewed channel in the self-defense and firearms space on YouTube. So we reach about anywhere from 25 to 30 million people a month.
Well, and you certainly reach my computer, my iPhone, every single day. So I appreciate the job that you do, and you do it better than anyone I've seen out there, John. So thanks in advance. Okay, here are the facts of this case out of Florida. McLaughlin, 28, was shot on July 19th after he came out of a convenience store and saw Draca berating his girlfriend, Brittany Jacobs, about parking in a handicap zone. Surveillance video showed McLaughlin shoving Draca to the ground, and Draca, who had a legal concealed weapons permit, pulled a handgun and shot Mr. McLaughlin. Probably everyone in the gun world has seen this video because it's just gone viral, and it's going to be probably as big a case as the Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case was, also from Florida. But, you know, you watched the video. My listeners, I'm sure they watched the video as well. What's going on with this, John?
Well, I mean, I did this video. Of course, it got sent to me about 11 billion times. And
yeah.
I did an analysis on this video. I did an analysis on it on our YouTube channel, so people can go find it there if they want to kind of walk through the whole thing with me. And I know that Terry's already covered the legal side. So that's a significant issue. But from a personal protection or a CCW holder's tactics, techniques, and procedures, TTPs we call those, there's just a lot of mistakes here. And, you know, I think honestly, from the perspective of a defensive trainer, not a lawyer, the manslaughter charges, he's going to have a hard time beating. And so the first couple things that I would say is, you know, my friend John Murphy from FPF Training in Virginia, he has a short pithy phrase that I think is fantastic, and it is this: gun on, ego off. That if you put a firearm on your person, you have to completely remove your ego. And that's not just from a legal perspective. That's from a tactics perspective and a techniques that says, no, wait a minute, I am not going to defend my ego, and I am not going to put myself in situations for my ego. And a corollary to that is, never go anywhere or do anything with a gun on you that you would not do without a gun on you. This is very important. Mm-hmm. And so I think the biggest mistake that I see, your very first mistake at the very least, is the fact that Draca decided to be the morality police and stick his neck out. Now, here's a question. Would he have done that if it was McLaughlin sitting in the driver's seat and not his girlfriend?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, would he have done that if Draca was unarmed? I don't know. And so, you know, inserting yourself into problems like that, there's an old adage, you know, that on the street that says, don't start none, won't be none. So there was a big mistake, because when you insert yourself in this thing, and of course, if you go look at history, right, so Draca is going to have a big problem from a tactical perspective when he's arguing in court that he was innocent here because he has a known history of confrontations with people. He has known histories that's discoverable in court about having confrontations with folks, even confrontations that involved him pulling his gun. Particularly the owner of the store has been reported as saying that he knows that Drake has come and used racial slurs and yelled at people in the past. That kind of attitude is not going to help him not only in the court of public opinion, but in the court of law. And so my first thing from a tactical perspective is, number one, I want every self-defender on earth and everywhere to commit to being a good person, to commit to saying, listen, my heart here is to protect me and my loved ones and not to insert myself in problems and become a moral crusader or become an undeputized police officer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Call the cops and let them come and write them a ticket. Don't do stuff like that. So that's kind of the biggest and first one. And there's bunches more from there, too. So, you know, next thing that we're talking about is that you notice that Draco was completely focused on this woman in the car, and then McLaughlin approached. He didn't even notice him. He was so focused on what he was doing that he didn't see this big guy coming up towards him. Now, had he seen that? Could he have, you know, if he was not just so locked in on his one thing that he's still looking around and seeing what's going on, he sees this guy come out and start heading towards him to be able to maybe back up, put your hands up in a, you know, what we call feigned surrender posture. Hey, man, you know, that's close enough. What can I do for you? And then maybe to have an argument instead of McLaughlin pushing him to the ground. Now, may it have escalated from there? Well, maybe, but his failure to see put him in a spot where he took that assault. Now, is that assault okay? No, it's a crime. If McLaughlin had lived, he would have been charged with assault, and rightly so, because pushing somebody to the ground is assault. Now, we can move forward from there. If you look, so the thing that I saw when I watched the video for the umpteenth time is that, okay, so he gets pushed to the ground. Now he is grounded, and this guy is aggressive, and he's not a small guy. He's a young guy, and he's over top of him. Am I okay with Draco pulling a firearm in that instance? Yes, I am. I think that in that case, he's reasonable to think that more attacks can be coming. He's grounded. He can't go anywhere. So could it be reasonable to make an argument, depending on how he articulates it, that he was in fear of an imminent deadly force attack and therefore drew his firearm in order to thwart that attack? Yes, I think from a tactical perspective, very wise at that point. Now, if he's a kung fu master or whatever, and instead he wants to do a double back handspring and, you know, get to his feet and play, you know, the Matrix or something, then fine. But drawing his firearm was okay. But where the problem came in, of course, is from a tactical perspective. We only use our firearm as a tool of last resort, and we only use it on an immediate or imminent deadly threat. So that threat has to be right now, and it's moment by moment. And I know that Terry talked about that. So the problem, of course, is that if you see the guy, he's like, whoa, he puts his hands out to the side, starts taking steps back. And this is going to depend on how Drake, in my opinion, articulates things. But is there a time, so this is a tactical thing, is there a time to take someone at gunpoint and in order to point a firearm and not use it? And the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. From a tactical perspective, you would far rather point a gun at someone if they're backing up and that controls the threat rather than actually using the firearm. Because imagine if Draco had simply pointed the firearm and said, dude, get off me. And now that causes McLaughlin to get off him, whatever. Then the cops get called and now there's all these problems. Well, I'm going to tell you that from a tactical perspective, I would have been applauding. Hey, that's a perfect use of a firearm because he pointed it at him. That guy backed off. The impending deadly threat evaporated, so he didn't shoot him. Then he was able to get up and this and that. Well, that's not what happened, though. You know, I mean, he might have at that point still had some legal problems, but that would have been tactically better. Now, I will say this. If you watch the end of the video, you watch what happens after. So he shoots McLaughlin. McLaughlin runs into the store and dies of that single gunshot wound. One thing that you will notice that I'm going to actually say was good from a tactical perspective is Drake had got up off the ground in a very efficient, effective manner. Now, I think it's actually going to hurt him in court because I've seen a lot of people who are arguing that he was older and frail and these kind of things. Well, actually, he's only 47 years old, and if you watch, he gets up without using his hands. So he's sitting on the pavement, and he is able to get from there to a standing position without putting a hand down. And that's something that doctors use, actually, to check someone's actual physical age, not their chronological age, but how able are they in their body. And he was quite able. Being able to get up off the ground without using your hands is indicative of good physical health. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing for us to think about as self-defenders. Can you get up off the ground with a gun in your hand? Can you get up off the ground without using your hands and feet? That takes a good bit of core strength and lower body strength and those kind of things. So working on that is a good thing because you might need to do that. Now, in this instance, I think it's not going to help Drake from a legal perspective, but from a tactical perspective, that was actually a really good thing.
Actually, that last one, that's a good point. I didn't even notice that one, so I'm glad that you brought that one up. People who are overweight and out of shape, boy, that's a good point. You might want to start backing off on the Mountain Dews, the Frappuccinos, you know, whatever your sugar kryptonite of choice is. So that's a good point. Now, but John, let's say the defense lawyers call you up and say, John Correa, we'll give you $100,000. To come in and testify on our client's behalf, is there anything that you could say that would get Drake off on this charge?
Well, I mean, okay, so I'm not an attorney, right? So I can't offer legal advice or any of those things. I do see what could go on here. And really, from a self-defender's perspective, here's the thing. So Drake, regardless of the outcome, because anytime you put a trial in front of a jury, crazy things can happen. And so juries are notoriously fickle. And we don't know from one instance to the next what their decision is going to be. I've seen plenty of videos that look like slam dunk prosecution cases that ended up with acquittals. And I've seen other ones that I go, man, they're going to have a hard time proving that case, where the prosecutor did. So from Drake's perspective, he might beat this case. He might beat the manslaughter charge. Now, it looks to me like that Florida manslaughter statute is going to be problems for him, but he might beat it at the cost of $100,000, at the cost of being crucified in court, being crucified in the press. He's going to pay the social cost of that, the emotional cost of that, the spiritual cost of that, the relational cost of that. And so, you know, of course, I think this should be a cautionary tale. I'd have to look at every bit of the case. So as somebody who could go in as a self-defense expert witness and say, okay, so what is his argument? If the defense was asking me to make an argument, boy, is it going to depend upon how Drake himself articulates what was going on in his mind. Now, some folks are bringing up that McLaughlin had a criminal history and he was certainly no peach, apparently. But unless Drake knew that, it's inadmissible in court because it doesn't speak. It can't affect what Drake did and why unless he knew it in advance. So at what point do we say something? Honestly, I think his best defense is most likely that if he can articulate and tell the truth, of course, you'd never lie. But if it was something like he drew his firearm, so he got pushed to the ground and he was very, very jarred and he drew his firearm and he couldn't see his front sight for a second or so, and he knew as a self-defender that he had to put the shot on target, and it took him about a second and a half with the gun at full extension in order to see enough of his front sight, and that's where he was focused in that moment because McLaughlin was so close to him with a deadly threat or something like that, and therefore he pulled the trigger one time, hit him one time, and then the threat evaporated, and so then he left. Could an argument like that in criminal court create enough of a reasonable doubt that the prosecution could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that what he did was justified? Yeah, I think that that's possible. Now, that said, there is a different standard in civil court than there is in criminal court. And I really think he's going to have, I mean, just a heck of a hard time. In civil court, McLaughlin's estate will most likely clean him out pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, John, I agree with you. I guess for me, the bottom line is don't stick your nose in other people's business because it could land you in prison. It really, really could. That's how important it is.
Yeah, and I do think, with the proliferation of concealed carry in the United States, I think that's a very good thing. And I think more good people who are prepared, who are trained, who are armed, is a good thing, because I think it's a speed deterrent against crime. And if for every one of us that carries a firearm every day, we provide herd immunity for those who don't, because bad guys don't know who's armed and who's not. That's a good thing. But my argument and my strong plea to all people who choose to carry a firearm is, please go beyond your CCW class. Please go beyond that basic pistol class. Please take a class every year, one a year. You know, you can get that for a couple $100, and take a legal and moral use of force class. And you can't just recognize it. I see people all the time that they go, well, I can read the law. No, you can't. It's not written in English unless you have specific training in it. It's written in lawyer. And I say that completely without any snark. It's really written in a very particular legal language. And so other people, oh, well, what about case law? Well, you know, that whole question evinces a lack of understanding of the legal system, because case law is not nearly as easy to understand as you think it is. And what might apply to this case may have nothing to do with firearms. And you're not trained to understand that. And common law is one thing, but statutory law is another, which is why people go to law school and get JDs, and why they have to maintain continuing education. So taking training in that, so then that way you know how it actually shakes out, keeps you out of this kind of stuff. I would say that the vast majority of people that I know, that when they know the law, they start minding their own business real fast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a lot more complicated than you think it is. John, we are out of time for this segment, but you have done a really good job casting more light on the tactical part of this case. John, before you go, real quickly, tell people how they can view your videos, because they're just incredible.
Easiest way is to go to YouTube, you know, load up your YouTube app on your phone or on your desktop and just search in YouTube for active self-protection. Or you can go to youtube.com/active self-protection.
All right. Hey, John, thank you very, very much for being on the Home Defense Show this week.
Skip, thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure, and I appreciate you much.
All right. Okay, folks, we got a two-minute break. While we are away, go out to YouTube, go to Active Self-Protection, check out John Correa. I think you'll really like the videos that he posts, and you'll become a much better concealed carrier if you do. All right, we'll be back in 2 minutes with Terry Johnson from Firearms Legal Protection. This is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Felix Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Always use guns safely and wisely. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly, Skip Coriel.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if life was like the movies and the good guys always won? In today's world, if you're forced to use your firearm to protect yourself, you will need protection. Firearms Legal Protection is here for you. FLP provides you with seasoned, experienced attorneys that handle your criminal and civil matters as a result of you protecting yourself. FirearmsLegal.com provides its members with uncapped attorney's fees, bail bond protection, and coverage in all 50 states. We are not a reimbursement plan. You can access uncapped attorney's fees for as low as $10 a month. Firearms Legal members are provided with educational services, training videos, and access to our vast national attorney network. While you're protecting yourself, let Firearms Legal protect you.
Listen up, folks. This is important. There are plenty of legal protection services out there, but none will protect you as well as Firearms Legal Protection. This is the one I use and the only one I recommend. Visit firearmslegal.com/Midwest Tactical and protect your family now. Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. Last segment, we had John Correa from Active Self-Protection. He gave us the tactical analysis on this Michael Draca case out of Florida. And now, this segment, we have Terry Johnson from Firearms Legal Protection. Terry, welcome to the Home Defense Show.
Skip, thank you for having me back. Always a pleasure.
All right. Now, Terry, this is a really tough case here. I'm gonna read you the latest article here, just bits and pieces of it, so our listeners know what we're talking about here. It says, judge denies lowering $100,000 bond for Michael Draca. Michael Draca is charged with manslaughter in the Clearwater shooting death of Miss McLaughlin. A judge has refused to lower the bond for Michael Draca, who is charged with manslaughter in the July 19 shooting death of Marcus McLaughlin outside the Circle A convenience store in Clearwater. The attorneys for Draca, age 48, had filed a motion to reduce his bond to $25,000, but Judge Joseph Ballone ruled $100,000 was a reasonable bond considering the facts of the case. Now, the facts of the case, basically, you know, the way I understand it, Terry, you can tell me if I'm wrong. This guy, Michael Draca, he was arguing with a lady who was sitting in her car with her kids about her boyfriend parking in a handicapped spot. And then the boyfriend came out, saw him arguing with his girlfriend, and shoved him to the ground. And then Michael Draca pulled out his gun, shot him in the chest. Those are the bare, and then he died. Those are the bare facts as I know them. Is that the way you understand them, or do you have something to add?
Well, I don't know what the argument was about as it relates to the vehicle, you know, when Mr. Draca walked up to it, but I will say there was an argument. It appeared by reviewing the video that Mr. McLaughlin came out. There was a shove, a push, and Mr. Draca then used lethal force at that point. Those are the facts, but what I know is the basic facts of the case.
Yeah, and there's all other kinds of, you know, conjecture about Michael Draca, you know, had a history of approaching people who were in handicapped spots. Like he was like the handicap spot guardian of the community or something.
And, right.
But we don't know right. That's true. That's just what people are saying. And that's the problem with a lot of this, you know, a lot of this stuff, it comes out in court like 6 months later. But on the bare facts of this, you know, originally the sheriff did not arrest him. He said he wasn't going to charge him. But I was under the impression that sheriffs don't charge people anyways, that it's the prosecutor. Is that your understanding?
Generally what happens in most jurisdictions across the country, there are a few exceptions, and maybe some of your listeners might be in those jurisdictions, but what generally happens is it is the police officer or sheriff's job to investigate a situation, and at that point they send it out for a warrant request to the prosecutor, which is a fresh set of eyes. The prosecutor then makes a decision whether or not they're going to charge based upon the report that's written by the law enforcement agency. And at that point, it's up to the prosecutor to decide whether they move forth and with what charges at that point.
Yeah. So initially, sheriff said, okay, I'm not going to arrest this guy. But then, I think like 10, 12 days later, prosecutor says, okay, I'm going to go ahead and charge him with manslaughter. Why manslaughter instead of murder? What is the difference between the two?
Great question. The difference between the two, I think, comes down to intent. Manslaughter, really, as you look at it, talks about more of a reckless act. If I'm driving down the street at 80 miles an hour and let's say I'm in a residential neighborhood, a kid crosses the street and I can't stop fast enough or I don't see him, I hit the kid. That would probably be more of a manslaughter because it was my actions that were reckless and negligent. That's what led to this person dying. When you talk murder, you're more so getting into intent, the intent of the party. Mm-hmm. When I saw the charge of manslaughter, I thought two things. First of all, it's probably something that he should take if that's the highest charge they've got on there. Because, again, sounds like the prosecutors aren't trying to start high like they do in some counties and then come up with a adjudication of manslaughter. It sounds like they're just saying, we believe no matter what, we can prove manslaughter, and that's what we're going with. The second thing, as I just mentioned from that perspective, is looking at it with all of the media attention and other issues that are going on down there, conviction of manslaughter is probably more likely than, let's say, second-degree or first-degree homicide, because, again, that bar is lowered just a little bit in terms of the elements you have to prove.
Yeah. Now, based on what we saw, let's just make some assumptions here. We're armchair quarterbacking, so we might as well go all the way with it. Let's say that he is not legally justified in using deadly force. If he's not legally justified in using deadly force, and he pulled out his gun and he shot the guy in the chest and he dies, isn't that murder?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're looking at two different things. When you say legally justified, it's going to come down to what charge is brought forth. So let me give you an example. In this case, doing exactly what you just said, if his intent, you got to look at the intent of the party. Was his intent to shoot this person and stop a threat? That's a big difference than looking at a legal analysis of manslaughter. Manslaughter is, did I commit a reckless act? Mm-hmm. In this case, pulling a gun, shooting someone, and or shooting at someone that caused someone to die. Give you another example here. If there is a crowd of people and I shoot a firearm up in the air, the round goes out, goes sky high, comes down, hits someone, and it kills them, would I be charged with murder or would I be charged with manslaughter? That's kind of how you have to look at the difference here. Versus if I took a gun and I shot directly into the crowd. If I'm shooting directly into the crowd, my intent at that point is to shoot at someone. If I'm shooting in the air, it's a reckless act. And as a result of that act, someone died. That's the big difference that you have to look at.
Yeah. This case, people are comparing this to the Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case. Probably because, you know, you had a black victim and Zimmerman's case, you know, Hispanic shooter. How can you even know whether or not there was a racial element to this?
Well, you know, again, let's go back to the beginning of the show when you say, what are the bare facts? Mm-hmm. The bare facts are exactly what you just said, which are you had a gentleman having an argument with a lady in a parking spot. We know a gentleman comes out of a building, argues with this Mr. Draca for a moment, pushes Mr. Draca. Mr. Draca shoots them. Anything outside of that is not a bare fact. It becomes, as you said, conjecture. How do we know if Mr. Draca was a racist or not? We don't. How do we know what Mr. McLaughlin was? You know, was he a racist or not? And quite honestly, it really doesn't play into the decision that a jury makes. The jury is just going to look at the facts, as you just talked about at the beginning of the show. What's going on is people are starting to use emotion and other things that really have no business in a courtroom other than to sway one side or the other.
Do you think there's a political element to it? I mean, because he wasn't charged for like over 10 days. But during that 10 days, there was a real media call, public outcry against it, because I would not want to be this Mr. Draca right now. Because when you watch the video, it doesn't look good. It just doesn't.
No.
Would you want to be defending him, Terry?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You know, a lot of times we don't get to pick our clients, you know, where they're kind of picked for us because of circumstances and situations. You know, do I believe Mr. Draca has a defense? Yes, but not every defense is a good defense.
Yeah.
In this situation, looking at the video, I do have a few concerns from a legal standpoint. One of the things is, you know, Mr. Draca had a moment to make a decision, and that's all it really takes between intent and not intent. If you go to the statute, and I'm referring to Michigan, because most of your listeners are in and around the Michigan area. One of the things you really got to think in mind, the key word in there is imminent. How long is imminent? Mm-hmm. Imminent is not a few seconds. Imminent is moments. And in this case, when Mr. McLaughlin is retreating, someone could argue that that threat is over at that point. That's one of the things that someone can argue. But you also have to look at other circumstances and things that are around. So I think there is a defense. It may not be a good defense, but, you know, that's something that his attorneys would have to look at, because I'm believing that they would have way more information than we as the general public would have at this point.
Yeah, that's for sure. I have one other question, Terry. You seem, you're very good, all you lawyer type guys. You've got an edge over us civilians, so to speak, because what you do, and you do it very, very well, you just say, all right, well, let's take out all of the emotion, let's take out all of the conjecture, all of the opinions, all of the rumors, and just look at the bare facts. Most of us out here in the real world, outside the legal world, we can't really do that. We carry everything into us, and when we look at that video, we give weight to certain things, like, you know, in the article here I'm reading, it says that, you know, there are reports of four separate times where he argued with people for parking in handicapped spots, and it even threatened them with a gun. If that is true, and it can be proven as fact in a court of law, does that enter into this case?
Well, I think you have to look at it from a different perspective. What did Mr. McLaughlin know at that point? And what do I mean by that? Had Mr. McLaughlin ever had an encounter where he had seen Mr. Draca do this before? Had these two ever argued about any of those things? You know, the fact that this person, Mr. Draca, had done this several times, that's going to go to his MO, modus operandi, you know. Is this something that he's done again and again and again? How has he done it? Have there been complaints against him filed with the police or other agents?
As far as stand your ground, people are throwing around, you know, the phrase stand your ground. This is a stand your ground case, and it's because of the Florida stand your ground law. Is this really a stand your ground case?
Don't see it as a stand your ground case, because, again, in its fair form, stand your ground means that you don't have a duty to retreat. Mm-hmm. In this case, Mr. Draca was not retreating at all. Actually, if you look at the video and you break it down moment by moment, you'll see that it was actually Mr. McLaughlin that was retreating.
Yeah.
When Mr. Draca used lethal force. Stand your ground just basically is, as long as you're not committing a crime and you're in a legal place you're supposed to be, that means you don't have to leave that particular area. You don't have to run for cover. That does not mean that, okay, I'm here, I don't have to run from you, I get to shoot you. Everything else applies as it relates to the analysis of use of lethal force. In this case, stand your ground has nothing to do with it.
Okay. All right. And I think that was the same case as the Zimmerman case as well. It wasn't really a stand your ground case. It was just a case of, you know, self-defense or not self-defense.
That's the problem that the other side has, real briefly, Skip, is they hear something and they say, see, this is why you shouldn't have this crazy law. The law's not crazy, and it has never been applied in the Zimmerman case or the Draca case. It has nothing to do with it. It's nothing but an emotional distraction to get one side of the argument what they want.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, Terry, we are out of time for this segment, but as always, your legal analysis is valuable and spot on. And before you go, you know, you are with Firearms Legal Protection, as am I. So go ahead, tell people where they can go to find out about Firearms Legal Protection, because right now I bet this Michael Draca guy probably wishes he had Firearms Legal Protection so he could get out of jail right now.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for the intro there with Firearms Legal, Skip. Yes, very simple. What we do is we give you uncapped protection legally if you're in a situation like Mr. Draca, not only criminal, but civil as well. We have great attorneys no matter where you are. We also provide bail bond situations. So as you saw some of you on the video with Mr. Draca, he's got to come up with bond. He can't afford an attorney. You know, he may get somebody that just wants some fame and fortune and run in and plea him out. With firearms legal protection, money isn't the issue. We pay the attorneys directly. It's not reimbursement. And again, if he gets sued on the civil side, we'll have an attorney for him as well. And as I mentioned, we provide bond up to $250,000. So those are just some of the benefits. But for more, go to firearmslegal.com/Midwest Tactical. And the reason I say / Midwest Tactical, because your members are listening to this, they will get a discounted price compared to going to the regular website.
Terry, once again, thank you again for being on the Home Defense Show.
Skip, anytime, and to you and your listeners, please stay safe.
All right. Okay, folks, this is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. We've got a two-minute break. While we are away, go ahead and check out Firearms Legal Protection on the Internet. And when we come back, I will be telling you what I really think about all of this mess. This is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Welcome to my dad's Home Defense Radio Show. You're gonna love it.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly, Skip Coriel.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
Skip, it's time for our Armed America Report. What do you have this week?
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, two armed men who targeted a home of an 84-year-old man in Ohio probably thought the victim would let them do what they wanted and leave. Instead, after one of the interlopers shot the homeowner in his side, the wounded resident grabbed a gun and exchanged gunfire with the culprits. It's unclear if either of the robbers was hit, but having a gun at hand saved the 84-year-old and his grandson, who had crawled out a window and onto the roof to protect himself. Smart kid.
Yeah. Thanks, Colonel. This story gives us an excellent opportunity to talk about what happens to gunfighters when they get old. Folks, let's face it, very few of us get stronger as we enter our twilight years. In fact, there are a lot of things that happen to our body as we age, and none of them are friendly. Our eyesight gets dim, we lose strength, mental acuity, agility, flexibility, hearing, and even stamina. All of these things impair our ability to fight off attackers, but you need not just roll over and give up, no matter how old you are. Aside from these negative things happening to our body, we should also look at some of the plus signs of getting older as they relate to self-defense. Number one, the law gives us older folks more leeway when it comes to use of deadly force. Think about it. What jury in their right mind would convict an 84-year-old man for defending himself like the man in this story did? In general, society more readily avails the use of deadly force to the weakest members of its society. The 84-year-old man cannot retreat and he cannot hope to defend himself against an attack without that equalizer that we call a firearm. Now, the deadly force laws vary from state to state, so I recommend you get legal advice from a competent licensed attorney in your state just to make sure. Two, the home invaders in this story greatly underestimated the 84-year-old man. They targeted him because of his age and weakness, and no doubt expected this job to be a walk in the park. So when an older person resists, that causes hesitancy on the aggressor's part, as they did not come to the altercation expecting an armed citizen who was determined to thwart them. Now, here are a few things to consider as a seasoned citizen before you run out and buy a gun. 1. Can you safely operate the gun without danger to yourself and those around you? Do you have the physical strength to press the trigger and to rack the slide? Can you control the recoil? If not, then go to a smaller caliber to meet those requirements. 2. Keep the gun close at hand. Make sure the gun is either on your person or have good gun safes on each level of your home. At 84 years old, it is doubtful you'll get much time to arm yourself, so the gun has to be close by. And 3. Get in the best physical shape you can for a person of your age. As always, start out slowly and work your way up. Don't try the Rocky Balboa workout on your first day of training. Use common sense. While all these things pose challenges to senior citizens, it doesn't automatically disqualify you from carrying a firearm. The 84-year-old man in this story did a great job as he fought off younger and stronger opponents, and Front Lines of Freedom salutes him.
He did a good job.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. Oh, wow. That was a great segment with Terry Johnson from Firearms Legal Protection. And, you know, that's one of the things that my concealed carry students worry about the most is when can I shoot? When can I not shoot? Please tell me what I'm supposed to do. Make it cut and dried. Make it black and white. But it's just not that way. And you just need to, you know, have the best judgment that you can get. And you get that by being educated and well-informed and knowing how the law works. And, hey, that's what Firearms Legal Protection is all about. It was good to have John Correa from Active Self-Protection give us the tactical analysis as well. We're gonna try and do that once a month, have that dynamic duo, you know, Batman and Robin of the self-protection world, John Correa and Terry Johnson from Firearms Legal Protection. If we can do that once a month, we're going to do that because I think you're going to like it. You're going to learn a lot, and it is entertaining as well. And they're just good all-around guys. All right, well, we're at segment 4, ready for the closeout, and you know what that means. Now I'm going to tell you what I really think. Okay, so we've heard from the tactical expert from Active Self-Protection, namely John Correa, and we've heard from the legal expert from Firearms Legal Protection, Terry Johnson. But now it's time for the host of the show to tell you what he really thinks about this whole stand your ground story out of Tallahassee, Florida. In my opinion, if Charles Dickens had written a novel about this story, he would have entitled it A Tale of Two Idiots. There are a lot of facets to this, so let's get started. First off, I agree with Terry Johnson when he states that this is not really a stand your ground case. It has nothing to do with the stand your ground law. How could it? The man who shot the victim was sitting on his butt on the pavement. Now, if they had a sit on your ground law, well, maybe, but the shooter, Michael Draca, he wasn't going anywhere. As I see it, the legal question here is, did Draca shoot McLaughlin in self-defense? And that question will be answered in the courtroom, where it should be answered. But here's the bigger question in my mind, and this one is political. The anti-gun left in Florida fought like crazy to stop the stand your ground from becoming law, and they lost. That infuriated them, and now every time there's a questionable shooting in that state,
They screamed that an innocent person was murdered in cold blood, and it never would have happened if the Stand Your Ground law hadn't passed. And I'm just not buying that, folks. That argument is nothing but political sour grapes, and we need to refocus cases like this back to where they belong. It was either self-defense or it wasn't, but it has nothing to do with Stand Your Ground. And now let's talk about the political correctness aspect of the case, which has to do with race. A white man shot a black man. Why is it the race of a victim is only mentioned when a white man shoots a black man? I'm a white man, and I just don't see a whole lot of my friends lining up to go out hunting for black people. If you listen to the news media, you'd think we were all rednecks with hunting rifles, and we all can't wait to go down into the hood for opening day. This is absurd. Are there evil white supremacists out there? Absolutely. Are there black people who hate and want to kill white folks? You bet. Prejudice is not restricted to one race. It's always been that way. But here's the truth. The vast majority of people, whether white or black, do not want to kill anyone, no matter what color they are. And I think it's time we told the media and the far left to crawl back into their dirty little skunk holes where they belong and just let us all get along with one another as best we can. Racism is a big enough problem without the media constantly throwing gas on the fire just to sell a few more newspapers. And last but certainly not least, we wouldn't be talking about this if Michael Draca's brain was bigger than his ego. Leave people alone and mind your own business. I've sat in the parking lot and watched healthy young people park in the handicapped spot and then walk into the store to do their business. It made me mad because they were being lazy and because they felt entitled, like somehow they were so important that the rules didn't apply to them. Did I want to do something about it? Heck yeah. Did I cause a ruckus about it? Absolutely not. Why? Because it's not my job. It's not my business. Because it would just make things worse. The bottom line is this. When I go to my gun safe, I take out my gun, and then I place my ego inside and I lock it up. Egos and guns don't mix any better than alcohol and guns or drugs and guns. Michael Draca put himself in a vulnerable position when he accosted McLaughlin's girlfriend. However, let me say this. Michael McLaughlin is no choir boy. He was wrong to attack a man. Ask yourself this. Would any of you behave like either of those two men did? I don't think you would. I know I certainly wouldn't. I can't defend either of these two guys. They both acted like idiots, and they both paid a high price for it. Michael Draca stuck his nose and his ego into places they shouldn't have gone, and he'll spend most or all of the rest of his life in prison. All he had to do to avoid that was walk away. And even worse, McLaughlin lost his temper and attacked a man. For that, he lost his life. That punishment does not fit the crime, and it just isn't fair. I implore all of you, if you're going to carry a gun, please check your ego at the gun safe. If you don't have the temperament for it, if you can't take an insult without walking away, then please do the world a favor and stop carrying a gun because you're making it tougher on the rest of us. And that, folks, is what I really think. Well, okay, folks. If you've got anything you want to hear about, anyone you want interviewed, a subject that you want me to talk about on the air, please let me know. Just send me an email to skipcoryell@hotmail.com, skipcoryell@hotmail.com. Check out our sponsors, firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical and also elitefirearms.us. And then head on out to amazon.com and check out any of my 11 books. And don't forget, The Blind Man's Rage, my 12th book. The fourth novel in the God Virus series is getting down to the wire. I'm at page 155 now, and we are planning on a release on October 1st, the opening day of bow season, which seems appropriate to me. All right, folks, that about wraps it up for this week's episode of the Home Defense Show. Until next week, remember your purpose in life is to find something greater than yourself and serve it. Always remember, God, family, country, in that order. It's important how you live, and it's equally important how you die. Your family and the ones you love need your protection, so train, always train, stay alert, stay alive. Until next week on the Home Defense Show, this is your host, Skip Coriel. God bless you, God bless your family, and God bless America.
Thank you for joining us this week on The Home Defense Show. Now, get out there and protect the ones you love. We'll see you next week with more of the best in home defense.
Bye-bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!